it is? Do you know what time it is?
It's another podcast. It's another podcast.
Joe and Micah. Joe and Micah. It's another podcast.
This is another podcast. I'm your host, Joe Feldman.
And I'm Micah Sternberg.
Today we welcome three of the four men in putting thank you. Welcome.
Yay.
Hi.
Hey.
It's nice to be referred to as a man.
Yeah.
What are you normally referred
boys
to as?
Boys or men?
Boys.
Or
men child.
Boys.
Men children.
Or just, yeah, or just as individual entities that imply a lack of manhood.
Hey, whose voice is that?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Joran Gargella.
This is the part of the show where we familiarize the listeners with your voices.
Okay.
I'm Louie. I'm the nasally voice who says a lot.
And this is Adel.
And who are we missing?
We're missing Ryan Dolan. He's at work with his bicycle without tires. That were two tires
but
were stolen last night.
He can still be here. I think we should.
You
want to
speak for him?
Okay, this is what Ryan Dolan sounds like.
It's true.
That's
actually,
true.
Adel does the best legitimate.
Are you kidding me? Are you joking? My tires? They took both my tires?
That's how he woke up this morning, because last night he was okay with it. Yeah, now he woke up. He just jerked out of sleep with a...
Did my impression set the board a hopping?
It did.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I challenge you to do that.
Okay.
Because our producer, Justin Gorson, loves fixing everything.
Oh, cool.
So that's an added layer.
Let's give him some challenges.
So when did you guys start playing as putting thank you together?
Like 5 years ago, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Was it five? Four or five?
Yeah.
About?
I think we're at five now. We started doing shows at The Spot. It was kind of our very first performance venue. And it was like Monday nights, and we made sure we sat through all of the sets, which was great.
Yeah, it was awesome because it was like we would do these... Because actually Ryan Dolan was the one who put the team together. He just had... He wanted these different folks to play together. He was on Revolver with me, and he liked Louie. And then Eddie Yades was a buddy of his, and he had the four of us play together. And we did a lot of bar prov at specifically The Spot, but a few other places. But The Spot was the best because it would be like an eight-team night where everybody would have like...
10 minutes. Or
yeah,
less.
10 minutes, and most of the teams were like so bad they were amazing. You know,
yeah.
The like, perspectives was that a team?
Yeah, perspectives. I apologize if either any of Aaron or Caleb is listening to this, but perspectives was
they were fascinating.
They were transcendent.
Yeah.
They would always go inside each other's bodies, and it was really remarkable.
It was the hardest I had laughed at improv, and it was mostly terrible.
Well, because it was like outsider art, you know, where these people who are probably clinically insane producing these pieces of work that are just amazing to look at and really, really like portray and capture something. And it was like that, but with the medium being improvisation.
Yeah, yeah,
it's really awesome. I mean, as much as I'm semi ragging on it, I was so happy it existed, and I really sincerely enjoyed it every time. And I got excited about it, and it was better than people that were afraid doing bad work, people that were insane doing insane work.
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty much it. So. Yeah, I mean, that was a blast. And then eventually we got a run at I.O. Right around the time Eddie Yates went on the boat, the second city boat.
And that's when we pulled Adel in to replace Ed. It was during our I.O. run. So we sort of played that I.O. run out. And that was kind of our first thing. The whole kind of goal was... At first, to play a bunch of bar prov, which we did, you know, the Gingers Monday night and The Spot, and you know, upstairs at Mullins for several times, and then And then all the shape us up so we knew what we were doing. We did a workshop with Rich Talarico and one with Noah, and the two of them kind of screwed our heads on straight about what we're trying to do sort of like concept wise for the show. And then that basically shaped us up to do our IO run. And then our IO run is where Ed transitioned out and Adel transitioned in, and that's where we sort of really became the team that we are. And then the thing I love is that we play all over the place in all these just weird situations that wind up being great. So we were doing a show, like a post play show at Straw Dog, when they were doing this bonus room thing where it was like after I don't even remember what play it was, but somehow Dolan was involved in it.
Was it One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Maybe so.
I think it was like, yeah, it was like and, right after One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, and so they would do this showcase in this extra room over at Straw Dog with like a little bar set up on a table in the back. And so Dolan set up one of those nights, and we played that, and it was a lot of fun. It was us and CPL. CPL's like original team picture is from that Straw Dog night.
Oh, really?
Counterproductive
yeah.
Lover.
For yeah, sorry, it's Counterproductive Lover, a team that I coached for a long time and that Micah is playing with now. And
yeah, we decided last night that I'm like the adopted like child that's like in the fifth season of a sitcom. They're like 4 years old and they're all just like talking about stuff like that I don't know
you're
about.
You're going to save it. You're going to be the one who has super fans. You're going to be the answer to
like the Raven
the trivia
Simone
question.
The
yeah,
show.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. There you're going to have your That's So Micah. but so, yeah. And so, and at that show is when Adel's sister Sadia brought all the American Theater Company people to see that show. Mm-hmm. And they really liked it. They liked what it was and liked what it was doing. And then they sort of gave us the opportunity to do a bunch of shows on their beautiful and amazing sets after their plays, which was really a super cool and unique environment to play shows in. And I feel like that sort of like was the final gestation. Like everything prior to that was us, you know, going from embryo to zygote to finally actually being born as an entity was us playing those ATC shows.
Do you feel like ATC is your home now? That's your base?
You know, it's funny. I mean, when we travel, it's the place that, you know, because most of the time people want to have, if you go out of town and play any festivals or do any sort of workshops or whatever, people want to associate you with the theater. Mm-hmm. And that winds up being the one that our name gets attached to. Like, we were just at Ohio State University this last weekend, and it was really funny because it's all college teams, and then I'm doing air quotes, professional teams from Chicago, and so all the college teams have whatever they're called, you know, sadly sometimes a pun on improv where they use it in the word improvement and drop the E, so it sounds
so
like
home improvement or something.
Yeah. So it all sounds like we're trying to get better than what we are now at improv, you know? It really bothers.
Which is like what they're literally doing?
Mission Improvable, like that thing where I'm like, your name reads as Mission Improvable. I'm going to see something that could be better than what it is. I don't know. So that's a pet peeve of mine in the lexicon. But
ATC.
In any case, next to our name was American Theater Company, you know? Yeah. So I think that's just
it was our longest run, I think. Like, that was our, it was Friday night.
About 2 years off and on. Yeah.
It was kind of our night, you know? Like, we were in the ones in charge. Actually, Adel did most of the work in getting other teams and making the night unique and special and free beer and all that kind of cool stuff. But like, I definitely feel like when we were there, that was like our it definitely became our home. We don't really perform as much there anymore. We'll do Armando style shows, but it does still feel like, you know, that was like where we became like more solidified as a team, as opposed to, oh, we'll do a run here, do a few shows here. It was like, oh, this is our place to play. And so that was cool. And they were so generous to us pretty much constantly.
Yeah.
Really, really cool people there.
And then outside of that, we've done some, you know, we've done a few months of anchoring a night at CIC. And then we just did a couple or a few months at IO that was really fun, that I felt like was really a success. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, we're just bouncing around, doing our thing. Yeah. Real independent spirit kind of deal.
Yeah.
How did you guys all meet each other?
Let's see. Well, Dolan got back from Improv Asylum. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Boston.
The place in Boston. He was in Boston for a couple years, and when he got back, he was put on Revolver because we lost Mike Carr to a working actor life in Florida, and so.
He's now the voice of Sully at Disney World.
Yeah, he's like
from,
operates
Monsters, Inc.
operates the CGI monster and does his voice. And then he's, I think he, I don't know, he does a bunch of other stuff. Yeah. Like I think sometimes he's a pirate, and you know, he'd be based, and then does a lot of work with SAC, that theater, and he's great. He's awesome, and so Dolan was added to the team, and it was in a phase when he was really in. He's feeling very inspired about creating things in improv, right? You know, now he's moved more into scripted theater and writing, and mm-hmm. and so he just wanted to. He really loved Foursquare and wanted to put something together that could have a feel like that of, you know, sort of a four person team of all improvisers that he thought had something to contribute, and so. And Louie and I had been through classes together at IO, and we hadn't been put on a Herald team together, but we still were trying to play together as much as possible. And Dolan had seen Louie play and realized that he was a unique flame. And
that was the best description I've ever heard.
All right.
And so he was like, hey, so okay, how about our your buddy Louie, and then also what would you think about playing with Eddie Yates, who, you know, neither Louie or I knew, and I think Ryan knew him from The Annoyance mostly. And Ed's awesome, and he was on Johnny Roast Beef, which is a real successful team a long time ago at IO. So we'd seen him play a lot, because that was a team with like a regular show slot when we were still in classes, and got to start playing with him, and he was great. I mean, he was just awesome. Really, it was a good chemistry job by Dolan putting us together. But that's why we played so much bar prov, is because, you know, Dolan had never played with Louie, and you know, neither Louie nor I had ever played with Ed, and so we just kind of we're trying to get our legs underneath us with that, and actually it worked out great. And then sort of when Ed moved on, we wanted to keep going, and so we kind of were looking for people, and Adel had started playing in a show called The Movie that Jason Chin had like remounted. Mm-hmm. that I'd been playing in, and so it felt to me like Al really fit the spirit of what we were trying to do with the team. And so we sort of rotated him in, started having him play. And then it was, you know, it was probably after the first show that any one of us played with him, where it was like, oh yeah, okay, this works great. This is what we'll
do. Yeah. I think it was, for me, it was like almost after the very first scene I did with him. I was like, oh, that was about as,
cause
much
I feel like the
I probably
first,
kissed you or something.
Yeah.
I feel
got
like
a nice mouth.
I think the first time, cause I think the first Putting Thank You show that Adel played was one where
George McCullough sat in.
Yeah. Somehow it was Ed had already gone on a boat, and both Louie and Ryan couldn't be there. So I just got to pick whoever I wanted to have play. So it was a Putting Thank You show that was George McCullough, Adel, and I, and it was a couple years before Adel joined Revolver too. He was on Hunter Family Crest at that point. And so, it was really a fun show. I still remember getting Adel pimping me really hard with this whole Lifehouse bit.
Yeah, I made you the lead singer of Lifehouse, and it was like something where I wanted an autograph, and you're like $10, and I'm like, are you kidding me? So it just became this whole like,
yeah.
Jordan fleshed out the lead singer of Lifehouse as like the saddest man in the world.
It was that was a really funny show. It's like, I mean, in that I it is one of those shows that I still actually have visceral feelings about, like what it felt like to be standing on a particular spot on the stage in the DCM talking to both Adele and George in the course of scenes and really having that like pinch switch flip over like there's really something special happening here because I am having a hell of a good time. Mm-hmm.
Was that the Baby Weather show as well? Where we got Baby Weather?
I think that's maybe where we got Baby Weather, where there was, it was something, I don't know, I don't remember why it was Baby Weather.
I think there was a hurricane, went through a trailer park, and I made it rain babies, and Jordan opened a door, stuck out his hand, and a baby hit it, and he goes, Baby Weather.
Which was
one of my favorite lines I've ever heard.
That's Adele and I's two-person show is Baby Weather. We took that to North Carolina to the Comedy Works where Micah has also been and did a two-person show called Baby Weather where I put together a gross poster and we had a great weekend. Adele ate as much barbecue as he could. You got made fun of by that waitress, right, for not eating all the barbecue?
I got put to shame, yeah.
Yeah, he tried to hide it with his napkin and
she called me less than a man.
Yeah. So there you go. So that's how we're not called men very frequently.
I get it now.
Yeah.
So, Adele, was the connection that instant for you too?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had I feel like this was maybe like 6 months after I started I.O. So I was really new to I.O. and I had been playing on the movie for a little bit. And on the movie, Jordan was maybe him and Rob White were like my absolute two favorite people to play with in that show and in improv ever. So it was just a thing of like anytime Jordan asked me to do anything, I was like, yeah, please. Yes. Anytime, anywhere. When he asked me to sit in that first show with George, I was just like, that was one of the most fun things I've ever done. And then getting to actually play with the full cast, the four of us, I was just like, this is the happiest I've ever been and the most at home I've ever felt with a team. And I feel like that's still true. Like, I feel like this is the least dramatic, most enjoyable team I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, it's really, I like how easy it is to have a really good time. And still, I think really consistently put up quality work.
Especially this last run at I.O. Like, I feel like those shows were some of the best
we've done. I was very, very pleased with that run, you know. And the folks that have seen us over a stretch of time, you know, I was happy to have people be like, for different shows, be like, I think that's the best show I've ever seen you guys do. And it's people that have seen us do shows on a pretty consistent basis over the last, at least the last 2 or 3 years, you know.
Yeah. So. I think there's something, too, I mean, like, about kind of the way we started, the way we got the ATC thing, that kind of informs our general attitude as a team, you know. I definitely think, like, because, you know, it's not like we're like an IO team that, you know, it's like, oh, you know, we're attached to something and we're like, you know, we've got to be you know, great all the time and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like it almost made us more like humble as a team, and like every night we play, I always feel like we're instead of like us feeling like, oh, it's like the showcase team, it feels more like we're just here to play, you know, and like enjoy, you know, what we're doing with each other. And it always feels like that. It never feels like, oh yeah, we're, you know, we're gonna fucking rock your asses.
Well, and I really appreciate sort of having the opportunity to be given so many chances by so many theaters. I mean, I know that we're theoretically this independent team, but I feel strong ties to IO, ATC, and CIC.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like all of those theaters have made investments in us at different times and given us opportunities that they didn't need to give us. And I really appreciate that, especially because those opportunities have almost universally manifested in them not telling us what they want us to do other than to do what we want to do. And I feel like that was maybe one of the things I like most about this last IO run was actually getting to do a night where we played with a Herald team opener and then got to play with the people on that Herald team and really sort of like be integrated into what I think is special about that particular building while still getting to do the show that we we do our show. Our show, while also getting to be a part of that community for that 2 or 3 months, was really cool. Really liked it a lot.
And then at ATC, you guys have, you do Armando's and you have a lot of different guests.
It eventually became that. It was, we had an opening team and then pudding, or two opening teams and pudding. And that was sort of the main part of our run. And then I think eventually we started to do, pudding would open for an Armando type show. And then I don't even want to call it an Armando type show because I don't, it's not, in our, it's a similar form, but I don't want to call it Armando. But
I guess technically we can't call it.
Yeah, we can't. We definitely can't.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, it also, I think that it really is, it's a monologue based show, but it's not, I don't feel like it's really along the lines of an Armando because it so frequently is a guest. Sort of a guest doing monologues that has no concept of what improvisation is and so can't perform the function of a monologist like a monologist would in an Armando. Like, they're just there to give prolonged suggestions for a montage.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I saw the show where the grease guy was there.
I played with you guys for that one. Yeah. Boy. That was disgusting.
I think it became... It's, It became great. What we would open for the...
What a filthy pig.
Yeah, he was disgusting.
It was the best.
But I think it became we would open for like a 30-minute monologist that we would put together the team. And then it was just like, well, why don't we just make this an hour? So I think eventually we had the monologist group swallow up pudding and we just played with them. And I think just because the guests we were getting, the sort of caliber of guests, it was like, well, let's give this person more time to talk. So we got like Nora Dunn talk, Jim Jacobs, who wrote Grease, Michael Shannon. We had some really cool like Chicago-based theater and just sort of other figures. So I think that became sort of it was their night of like, let's get this interesting person to tell interesting stories and then we'll perform off of that. So
yeah.
I think at some point I would really like it to go back to being pudding. Just because I feel like that was the heart of the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think... Well, I think there's more... It's not really us playing a show. It's us being a part of some other show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, right now it's not really putting... Thank you. It's just... Mm-hmm. It's the four of us playing with... creating a sort of night, so...
Yeah.
I'd like to get it back to being pudding.
Yeah.
My brother does a similar monologue type show where they call it like VIP and they'll have like somebody from Grand Rapids come and speak. And they had like a mega church pastor come, Rob Bell.
Oh.
And they said they sold out the show in like a minute. As soon as he announced it at church that he's going to be there, they like sold it out. And he said like doing the show, they would like do scenes and he would be like sitting like off stage or on the stage like off to the side. And like everyone in the audience would like watch him. And, like, if he laughed, then they would all laugh. But if he didn't think something was funny, they would just be like, crickets.
Oh, man.
They, like, needed his permission to, like, laugh at stuff and then, like.
Man, that hive mind.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't know. Is that an accomplishment? I don't know.
That really had nothing to do with anything.
Maybe that's what you're going for if you're in charge of a mega church.
I think
absolutely.
I think so. Yeah. You know? So have you guys always been playing as Pudding Thank You?
Because that was part of Ryan's stipulation, kind of. Like, for whatever reason, he was... I think it came shortly after we formed as a team. He was like, okay, I want us all to play together. Let's start doing these bar prov shows. And then shortly after that, he was like, also, I want us to be called Pudding Thank You. Just because improv team names are dumb, and this is the dumbest name I could think of, and so I want it to be that.
Didn't you have an octopus name?
Yeah, what I was proposing is that we would be called Quadrupus, which would be a four-tentacled octopus. And when we were first doing our bar prov shows, I would do a quick little sketch of the Quadrupus, like, to post on CIN for every show, doing something different, you know, like a little whatever it was doing, playing guitar or whatever, but it would be a little four-tentacled octopus called the Quadrupus. And so that's kind of, it's fallen a little bit by the wayside, but the Quadrupus comes up every so often and it's sort of our mascot, you know, when we play Flip Cup at, at OSU, and when we sometimes we form the quadrupus and taunt the college kids. That's he still exists on a certain level.
They're all dancing.
Yeah.
We're swaying from side to side like water is flowing through our bodies.
So, Jorn, your pet peeve is improv pun names for improv teams.
Well, here's where that kind of roots from, is that I personally kind of think, you know, it's I don't really think of improv as a good forum for writing jokes as much as sort of a joyful expression that produces laughter, you know. So joke names kind of really bug me, because I feel like an improv ensemble should have an attitude that's more like a rock band, you know, where you're like, you're this group of people that is all trying to get together and really make people feel something. And that feeling is probably feelings of comedic stirrings, but you're trying to make them feel something, not manipulate them into laughing. And I feel like a joke is a manipulation. So, and it's just dumb. I mean, it's dumb. I feel like that's, it's, you know, if we're trying to get people to think about what is happening, passing a name in front of them that if they really break it down, it's like, oh, they're saying they're not very good. And it could be a great team. So it's like, I just don't use improv as a substitute for improve in the name of your team, mm-hmm. because it says you need to improve something. And maybe we all do, but there's no need to call it out like that. No mm-hmm. need to set the expectation that low.
Yeah. It's not worth the cheap laugh.
No. Mm-hmm. And there are a million highly improvable was another one. Oh. And I guess that's like... it's like a, you know, it's supposed to be like highly improbable, I guess, but improvable reads as improvable. So you're saying you're highly improvable. Like, there's a lot we could do a lot better, but this is what we're giving you.
See, yeah. I think that stuff bugs me just because it's cutesy. Like, I hate a pun coffee shop, a pun named coffee shop. Savor the flavor. Or anything that rhymes.
Well, my dentist is the whole tooth. And
nope.
I went.
Nope.
I selected that dentist just because of the name.
I will say I hate all of those, but I love barber shops with pun names.
What's
like
the best
hairs
one?
Hairs looking at you.
No.
See, I feel like there's something to those, because there's something I enjoy about those, because I'm kind of like, it's so far off of what they're really trying to accomplish that I feel like the joke is a bonus, because they're not trying to make me laugh or, you know, as their primary service. So the idea of,
if it's any sort of healthcare, I don't want that, because I want you to be professional.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's for whatever reason, I was like, ooh, whole tooth.
That does it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to take care of me. Yeah. Oh, I love it. I think maybe if it was a genital doctor, I wouldn't be into it.
For sure.
Because I don't want them laughing.
Adel, what gets your goat?
Improv pet peeve? I think the biggest one would be cut. So people are doing a scene and someone yells cut. I think that's pretty lame. I think I'm sure there's some point where that's the right thing, but I think that's pretty lame. I think also making something a commercial. So, like, two people doing a scene, and then somebody says sword, and they're like, has this happened to you?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's... And again, there may be a right context to do that. And then the third one would be... I have a lot. The third one would be two people go to edit at the same time. They bump into each other or bump into a chair, and then the whole scene becomes about, I bumped into a chair, or I bumped into another person.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Or the chair move.
Yeah.
Or like someone, like, moves a chair, and they're doing it to clear the stage.
Yeah, and then it becomes a thing.
Oh, now we're going to talk.
Because it's like, if you edit it, you probably went to edit with a purpose, or you maybe had an inspiration, and then your inspiration immediately becomes just, oh, I bumped into this chair. Let's talk about this for, you know.
Or the wheelchair bit.
Oh, see, that's what I was going to say. The somebody's been sitting in a chair.
Now it's a wheelchair.
And then... They move the wheelchair.
You hate the reveal.
And what sucks is, early on in my improv career, I've done it a couple of times.
I think we've
But
all
I didn't
done
do it as like a... I wasn't trying to do it as a bit. Like, I actually thought I was in a wheelchair the entire time. But also, now I'll never do that again, because it's been ruined.
Every time it is in doubt on me, I'm like... I'm going to stand up.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stand up. I'm going to do like a Guy Caballero moment and get stand up and just say that the wheelchair is for sympathy. But I don't need it. Or I've been miraculously cured or whatever. It's just, there's a really high percentage of people in wheelchairs and improv shows.
Mm-hmm. Wheelchairs, and I feel like diabetes is thrown out a lot. I feel like I've seen a ton of shows where somebody's like, I have diabetes. Really, and the audience dies laughing. And I'm like,
why?
It's a major issue, man.
Yeah, it's an epidemic.
I saw Pimprov a couple weeks ago at the Uncle Fatty's marathon.
Oh, man.
And they taught all the white people there that black people call diabetes the sugars.
Oh.
And they broke the fourth wall and they told us that in the show because they were talking about it.
Hey, why don't you update our listeners on the results of that competition?
Oh, yeah. Demon K got third place and we won $500.
Nice. That's
they
a bronze. $10,000
in cash at the bar.
Wow.
Wow.
That, like, a girl brought out on a tray and then like a big, huge guy was guarding for the whole show.
Wow. Oh, man.
And a dozen red roses, a CIC team won the $8,000.
Yeah. And they,
awesome. And Virgin Deckery got second.
They, and a real character move, a dozen red roses donated, a significant portion of that money to CIC.
Yeah, oh, wow. That's
wonderful.
Awesome.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Yep. Class move.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
What did DMNK donate their winnings to?
A big pizza.
Right back to Uncle Fatty's. Bought some beers, being there the whole time. And then, we bought 330 racks at the upstairs gallery the next week. 30 packs of beer.
Oh, man, that is probably nearly $65 of value.
Yeah.
And, that's about it. When...
Nothing to sink back into the podcast.
Sorry.
It's okay. You have a lovely home.
That's fine.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Nice in here. Yeah. This is our second show that we've done above ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see that basement.
Yeah, we'll take a look after this.
All right.
Oh,
still
please.
We flooded 3 months ago and it's still under construction.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Adel, you host a podcast. Is it fun being on the other side?
Yeah. I mean, I don't like talking on my podcast anyway, so I don't talk a ton. That's why I have a bunch of guests on, is so I don't have to talk. So I enjoy listening to other people, but I don't enjoy talking a ton.
Yeah, I hate my voice. Like, I
me
really
too. Me
hate
too.
My voice.
Just gotta get used to it.
I know, right?
No.
Yeah, I actually feel better about it usually.
After hearing it?
Yeah, although the last time when Adel and I were on Arnie Niekamp's Stupid Nerd talking about the show Supernatural, oh man, it killed me how many vocal tics, repeated vocal tics I had.
Sure.
I think I said and basically a lot. Which is nice because I've been keeping an eye on that in
have
my head
you?
This time. And I believe I've done a really good job excising those from my speech.
I was on Adel's podcast before we started this podcast, and I talked about it, and you poo-pooed it quite a bit.
What did I do?
Do you remember this, Micah?
It was Jeff Griggs, wasn't it?
I poo-pooed your podcast?
Yeah.
You're like, well, we'll see if that
we'll
happens.
See
if happens. If anyone listens to
and
that.
It did. It happened.
It
did
happened,
I really say
and
that?
We average a solid 30 listens per episode.
Oh, that's
are you sure it was me
good.
That said that?
Yeah. I don't think it was Griggs.
What? I think we broke the century mark on a couple of our podcasts.
That's great.
Ooh, nice.
True.
Wow.
We'll see how many we pull for you guys.
Three, I think.
Yeah.
And four.
I don't want to. I'm not going to listen to this.
Oh, okay, so two and a half then, because Dolan will get mad and shut it off.
He'll hear 2 minutes in and then hear my impression and just be like, ah.
You guys do a ton of stuff outside of your group together, so I want to talk a little bit about that. Starting with Adel, what do you do?
I'm on Revolver at I.O. World News Tonight at I.O. I coach Sears Tower, which is a Herald team. They're pretty cool. Play at the playground with Mort and help run the mixer. And help do an incubator program over there and help at I.O. with a coaching program and some other stuff there. And my podcast.
It's a lot of stuff.
Hmm?
And eating like a king.
Yeah, I'm a big food nerd. So.
Oh, I watched the preview for Next.
Isn't that cool?
It was really cool. Do you want to talk about Next?
We can.
What is Next?
Next is a restaurant that started maybe 8 months ago, and every 3 months they come out with a new menu. And their initial concept
like
was
the Parisian cafe.
Yeah, the initial concept was it's going to be a location and a time period. So the first menu was Paris in 1916.
Oh my
So
God.
Everything you eat, and the main chef is Grant Achatz, who's like the number one chef in North America.
And are they doing one in the future soon?
They talked about it. So the first one was Paris 1916, which was phenomenal. And then they did a tour of Thailand, which was basically starting with street food or street vendor food up to like upscale dining in Thailand. And then this newest one, which I just went to last week, was
and there was some
some man boys,
really gross tourist sex.
Yeah. And then the newest one is Childhood. So the whole meal is just based around the chef's childhood experience. So there's a dish where it's like...
he's working some stuff out.
There's some real dark dishes. But there's a dish where it's like you get two sort of donut holes, like apple cider donut holes, and then they bring out a beater, and it has frosting on it, and you lick the frosting off the beater. Which is really cool. And it was like the frosting was actually like foie gras.
Yeah, but
so it's like really...
It's so frustrating.
Yeah. And then there was a course served in a lunchbox, and it's just funny to see all these. There's like all these Japanese businessmen in like Armani suits, and they're opening Alf lunchboxes.
That's great.
And there's like inside the lunchbox was like a thermos and an Oreo made out of black and white truffles. Oh. And there's a note from your mom. Like they write a little note from your mom.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh,
so
creepy.
It's just like
that's
this incredible experience of like
notes from your mom are creepy.
Just really
well
really
from like
funny.
Someone else doing a fake note from a fake mom.
I just imagine your mom writing you notes like, "I'm gonna get you."
All of my mom.
Don't bother coming home.
My mom's notes were really menacing.
So that's me.
Is he the guy? I think I heard that guy in Fresh Air. Did he have tongue cancer?
Yeah,
he did. He almost lost his tongue. They told him he was gonna have to. He lost all sense of taste, which is devastating to a chef. And then he tried some experimental thing and it worked. So they were about to remove his tongue and then something worked and now he has his full taste back.
Hey, how long does it take to eat a 12-course meal?
It's usually about 2.5 hours.
Blee.
The longest I've done was 3.5 hours, which after a while the wait staff starts to talk to you and it's really weird.
Unless it's a hot dog eating contest and you eat 12 hot dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it's as fast as,
then it's
as fast
3 minutes.
As you can
Kobayashi
do
probably
it.
Do 3 minutes.
I feel like somebody's optioned that screenplay about that guy. That's just too perfect.
Not Kobe?
No. The guy who.
Kobayashi?
Kobayashi.
No. The
chef
yeah.
who lost his.
Oh,
yeah,
graphics.
That would probably be a
I'm
little
with
more
you.
Gripping.
That's a movie,
yeah.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It's like Beethoven, right?
Yeah. Did he go deaf?
Because he was deaf.
Oh, yeah.
Uh huh.
But he wasn't cured of his deafness.
All right.
There's a hole in your story.
He could be.
Yeah, yeah.
In a movie.
Know. Yeah, if you did like a modern day Beethoven story where he got
it'd be like flowers for
cochlear implants.
Yeah. Cochlear?
Is that right?
It's cochlear. But cochlear is probably a more fun way to say it.
Oh, guys, I'm just silly.
Louis, what do you do outside of putting thank you?
I am on Felt with Joran. I'm on Boyish with Joran. I'm on Rainbow Deli with Joran. I also am on Wing Night at the Playground. And
Henrietta Pussycat
at I.O. And I also coach a new team, Just Us Girls, which I'm really excited about. So that's pretty much my things, the things I do.
And if you could have, if you went to the restaurant next and you could have any menu, what would your ideal menu be?
Menu? Like what time period and what?
Or what concept?
I would.
Garden of Eden.
Just all apples.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the apple would be the last thing that you would eat, and then they would
and then
grab
you
and throw you
yeah.
out.
And you're eating naked the whole time.
Yeah.
And at the end, they throw clothes on you and kick you out.
Yeah.
Shame.
At the end, you take a bite of the apple, and they turn on super hot spotlights, and everybody starts pointing out that you're naked. Whereas up to that point, they'd been doing everything possible to make you feel
to
comfortable
avoid
about
at
it.
Junk, yeah.
Yeah.
Full on icon.
Yeah.
I think it would be because we recently went to New Orleans, which was absolutely next to Chicago, my favorite city, and Adel was actually telling me about a story about that he learned on a ghost tour about this woman who like basically put someone in a cage and just fed them until they grew into the cage, basically.
Oh, their body took the shape of the cage.
Took the shape of the cage. That's the menu I would want.
That's not a menu, man.
You just get inside a cage.
Maybe the person in the cage?
Yeah. Like, everybody pays a lot of money, gets in a cage, and then they feed you until you form... Yeah,
I feel like you pay so much at that. Is that, I'm assuming that restaurant's expensive, but I feel like they could do anything and people would do it.
Yeah,
it is sort of a Emperor's New Clothing thing of like, I feel like if they ever did have a miss, that people would still say it's a hit. But I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, so yeah, I'm cool.
You can't eat at places where they don't offer substitutions. Real picky.
They did. I went with my sister and they offered her substitution.
Really? Mm-hmm. Like if you're a vegetarian.
She's a vegetarian, but she did try meat, but they tamed down the meat for her. So if the meat got...
Tame it down.
Yeah, what does that mean?
I think there was...
Less
maybe
veiny,
like a,
less obvious veins in all the meat.
There was like a duck rillette, and I think instead of the duck rillette, they gave her just like pork or like beef or something. They simplify, because I think she's more of like... She hasn't eaten meat in like 15 years, so she was like, if I do eat, I just want to eat beef or chicken. Like really tame.
So if it's in the bird family, pull it closer to human beings by shoving it into the mammal family.
Yep. I don't want to eat something cute, like a duck.
Right. I only want to eat something that has been carved off of the ass of a creature.
Jordan, do you do anything without Louis?
Yeah.
You gotta... Yeah, I do. Right.
Shower.
What?
Shower?
Yeah, I shower without Louis. I play a couple shows at the playground. I'm on the maintenance crew for the Big Yellow Bus. And I play with a team called Mustang Repair there. And I play an occasional two-person show with Farrell Walsh called Howard Cross after the greatest blocking tight end of all time, Howard Cross of the New York Giants. And I'm about to start playing a show at CIC that's called the Chicago Supersonics. That's, going to be a Sunday night show. That's all, improvised Foley stuff. So everybody in the cast is going to be doing improvised Foley work as well.
Have you done Foley work before?
No. And I'm really bad at, anything requiring hardware. You know, in my day job is that I'm a front end web developer, so I do a lot of computer programming. But when people find that out, they're like, "Oh, you know computers? Maybe you can help me do this thing with my electronics." And I'm like, "No, I can't. I'm very not able to control the things that happen out of my hands." My dad is a carpenter, and when I was 16, he had me like circular sawing a piece of wood, and somehow I cut the cable of the circular saw with the saw, and there was just this, it was amazing. It was like this flash of blue light, like a star had been pulled out of the sky and just popped, and then the saw powered down and I had to drive the pickup truck to buy a new cable for the saw, and after that I was consigned to just the heavy lifting of particle board and trash detail. So
I saw you guys do a Howard Cross show once, and you asked for a suggestion in a way that I've never seen anyone else do it. You just said, so we're all on the same page. What kind of scene do you guys want to see?
Yeah,
is that something you guys do for that show, or is that something you just felt like you needed to do that night?
I think it's something that I did at one point for something. I think it's something that
Cyclops Baby.
Yeah, we used to play a lot of Revolver shows at CIC under the name Cyclops Baby, and I just started doing that then. And it's just sort of like, if I'm playing a show that I feel like I really kind of have a good stake of ownership in and the attitude is right for it, I like to do that because sort of the act of improvisation is one where inevitably you kind of follow the whatever is inspiring. And so I kind of like getting a scene that people would like to see, because I feel like it loosens people up and makes it less of a gotcha game for them. Like, oh, how are they going to use my suggestion? And more like, hey, we want to have a good time. We want you to have a good time. Let's start as far ahead of the curve as possible. And, whenever we improvise that scene that people want to see, it's you know, it bails out really quickly.
It's
like,
never the scene. Yeah, that they asked for.
Yeah, it's you know, it very very quickly permutates into something else. So, yeah.
So do you do that when you think like maybe the audience hasn't seen a lot of improv before, just to get on the same page? Or?
You know, it's it's just about feel of the room and feel of the team. You know, but I mean, it's like a lot of times when we did this last Putting Thank You run, I purposely dicked with these guys every time before the show. I don't remember exactly what kind of suggestions I got, but I changed it up every time and tried to make it something less of like shout a word and more of like, I want you, and I guess that's part of it. Like, I want you to start thinking. So think of something that is more complex than yelling a word that you think is funny, and have that inform the tone of what we're doing. And so I did that with this Putting Thank You run. And even when I brought them, when I would bring these guys on stage, I tried to do it different every week so that it wasn't just like, you know, I'm usually hyper energy with shows. And so usually it's a lot of like pouring my energy into an audience and hope that they get crazy from that.
Yeah.
So this time was a lot of like trying to purposely create an awkward and potentially disappointing beginning to the way that we're introduced, just to break down all those walls and have us all feel like we're on the same page, audience and performers. So that's pretty fun. I like that. I don't know if these guys like that, but I liked it.
Oh, I definitely do.
It was a very fun way to start, but also like initially it was always walking out and going, oh, cannot believe you had everyone yell out their favorite movie monster just at the same time.
Make the noise of their favorite movie monster.
Yeah, and great. Just walking out and just being like,
oh, that man, was, I think
that's more fun than anything we're going to do.
I think that was maybe my favorite one too, because it turned into a Q&A.
Yeah, somebody was like, question, what's the noise that Mothra would make? And so Jordan would be like, I think it would be like a, and he'd be like, does that work? And they're like, yeah. So it was just like everyone going to Jordan of like, would you please tell me what my monster sounds like?
Yeah, that was really,
I do remember that. That was
I really enjoyed that.
Do you guys have a signature form?
We have a signature. I guess it's form like, but it's more concept. I mean, there's a very loose form that is supposed to serve the concept of the shared experience. So, what we've got is something that Rich Tallarico worked with us with, where our very first scene is all of us on stage in a shared experience. So, no status games and no oppositional stuff. We sort of are all trying to start as closely as possible and then sort of like let the natural divergence occur. And sort of after that, it is what happens is just either that has legs enough to exist as a single scene for the whole show, or, and this is kind of what Noah had us really think about, was follow the thing that is going to be the most fun to play. Like, your show should be the thing that people most want to see, and that includes you. So it can rapidly turn into a storyline or a series of tangential, like, sort of tags and moves and threads, mm-hmm. or one long. I mean, I think probably, you know, we've had some shows that I feel like have been really excellent, and there's a debate could be waged between us, I'm sure, over what we thought was the most successful. But I think probably one of our best shows was for a very small house at ATC, where we were a bunch of guys all running away from a werewolf and had accidentally tried to hide from the werewolf in the werewolf's house.
Yeah.
So like the werewolf's son was inside. Yeah, right. And then the werewolf came and was like, yeah.
Yeah. So we did a 30-minute show of basically these four guys panicking inside this house. Their werewolf was trying to get back inside.
It's one where we all started to play each other, right? Like,
yeah.
We all just started to make fun of each other.
I just love the idea of we're running from a werewolf and we accidentally go into his house.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I'm not chasing you. I just went in my house. He's like, how can we trust you?
Yeah. I think that was definitely, I
put that in our top five shows.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, you know, that was kind of outside of what the typical execution of the air quoting again form would be, because typically I think it's more of a 3 to 10 minute long scene that generates a lot of tangential ideas that we then follow.
I feel like with our recent IO run, the form became, and I don't think it was never said, but just became, we'd start with a 4-person shared experience, and then it would just be like an expanding of that world. So like if we started at like a lunch table, we'd expand and see maybe somebody at the high school and then maybe follow their life. So it became like a very sort of expand out, but then keep the world fairly incestuous.
Yeah. And I think what I liked too is that something that emerged was that we kind of, whether it was sort of perverse or not, we did a lot of kind of really jamming down on one idea, even though it may not have been a very distinct thread. So that particular show that Adel's talking about, we were basically four kids at a lunch table that were getting something for the first time that we've never had. And we're super psyched about it, but also had an issue with a particular teacher. And so we were going to trick that teacher into marrying one of us so that it would be a scandal of like a teacher and student romance and get that teacher fired. It was very convoluted, but in the context of the show, it made sense. And sort of the conclusion of the show was that grand plan explored in a variety of threads worked out, but the teacher was the one who had been the advocate for switching lunches up. And so in our devious pursuit of trying to get the one teacher fired through marrying a student, we had lost the diversity in lunches that we had started with as the most valuable thing in the show. So we had moments like that that were really, mm-hmm. that seemed to emerge over.
Do you guys have any pre-show rituals?
Louis usually does yoga.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ryan Dolan does too now.
Yeah. It's really basic. I don't even really know yoga except for what We Fit taught me. So I do everything that We Fit taught me, which is really just
that's great.
Like sun salutation, downward dog, saluting. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
I feel like maybe just catching up with one another and maybe even just like the pop culture that we've consumed that week. So it'll be like, here's what TV shows I'm watching. Here's what albums I listen to or comics. And like maybe trade, like, here's a comic, check this out. Or yeah. So I think it's just getting just in a really cool way, just connecting with one another rather than being like, let's play Zip Zap Zop and that'll connect us. It's like, we're already friends and we're already connected and the show's going to be fine. Like, let's just.
Yeah. Cause I think that something that I feel we strive for is conveying a sense of stripping away pretense and artifice, you know, and really trying to make an audience feel what our relationship is to each other and what we do collaboratively think of as a group. So we may discuss some technical things of what we want to try to do in a show, but it's at a very practical level, you know, and it's not a very stuffy one. It's more like, oh, this is what happened last time, or this is what I gleaned about the feel of this crowd. So maybe we should try and sit in this or try and do, you know, real low level, technical, practical stuff. And then just, yeah, initiating the ability to have a conversation with each other because, you know, whatever little character bits we drape on ourselves in the beginning of the show, we're still going to be essentially be having a conversation is the way that we start our show.
It's my favorite part of the show.
Oh, yeah.
It's where everyone says something really nice about one of their teammates.
Okay. Ooh.
Positive affirmations.
Okay, sure. Well, it's going to be really non-dramatic, I feel like, because we're really a bunch of Fruit Loops about how we convey what we appreciate about each other all the time. Let's see. Dolan is a really fantastic actor with a lot of heart and gravity. Well, everybody's got to. Okay, that's how I'll do it. Through the lens of heart, Dolan's heart manifests in a great deal of gravitas and sort of emotional intensity and willingness to put how wounded he is out there and feel, you know, and have that be something that buoys everyone, strangely enough, his capacity for feeling things is helps all of us. Louis is, of course, pure love, willing to flow all around us and make sure that that positive things are happening all the time. And Adel is game for anything and will charge into the blaze and make sure everything's going right. So, you know, sort of, I think Ryan gives emotional connectivity, Louis gives love, and Adel gives action. And then I intellectually analyze it to death.
I definitely, I mean, I always feel so comfortable in every show I'm in with Joran. In fact, that's probably why I do so many shows with Joran, because he is...
We're heterosexual life partners.
And we are, yeah, we are heterosexual life partners. And that even the heterosexual part is kind of... I feel like he is a... He's like an architect, and someone who like can look at a show in a way that I'm still working towards all the time. Plus it's just he's just joy. Like everything delights him. Like I love sitting next to him when watching shows because of what he laughs at and how he laughs at it.
I really like improv.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he just likes, he likes reveal. Like he likes the revelations that come from, what improv has, and it's so easy to play with him in shows because of that. Like, as soon as something is revealed, that's what he loves, and that's what he wants to play with.
As long as it's not a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Well, I'll play with it.
Yeah. He'll just dance around it.
Yeah. If it's a wheelchair that's revealed, I'll be like, okay, this isn't actually a revelation. This is shorthand. What can we reveal about this wheelchair? Yeah. That's a really astute assessment. I haven't thought of it like that, but thank you. It's an interest. I do love the revelation.
Yeah. Adel is just, God, I look in his eyes and I always feel like it's a constant dare. Like, it's like
instigation. Oh,
I'm going to do whatever happens, and I'm going to do it as much or more than you're going to do it, which always ends in like, destruction
and
but it's like I said the very first show you were in, I think there was just like an ultimate like this like connection, and I think it's the same as like our friendship. It's just very much like it's definitely like two people who are along on a ride, or multiple people. I feel like that's true of all of us, but like he's the one who's like, oh, are we gonna do this? Then we're gonna do this.
Yeah, it's the love of your love of thrill ride, and like your epicureanism is a great motor for making things happen. Because you do want to push to the sensation. Yeah.
And I just think Ryan feels more than anybody. He's definitely like, it comes out in anger a lot, but I think it's in everything. Like when he loves something, he loves it. So anything you give him, he is going to care about it one way or another. I don't think I've ever seen him play a game where he like didn't. He's like, oh, I'm going to do the funny thing of not caring about the baby dead. Well, no, he's going to fucking care about it and one way or the other, you know, and it's just like really like, again, and it's the things that are fun to play in improv with these guys is the same thing that makes them the people I love. And, that's what everybody I hope can find in improv is literally the things that you love about that person on stage are the same exact things that make you love them as people. So, I mean, I'm so comfortable on stage with all of these guys more than anybody else, because I know I'm playing with them, you know, there's never going to be that, like, you know, what are they doing? It's, oh, that's so Adel, or, oh God, fucking Ryan. That's always what's going through my head. And it just makes me so happy. I come off our shows and I'm like, I have the best friends a boy could have.
I'll say, to me, Jorn is like a human defibrillator. I'm just like, anytime I feel like, oh, there's like a lull, or I feel like, you know, maybe things aren't going as well as they could be, he just injects life and fun and energy into everything. And that he, playing with him and doing scenes with him, especially with Pudding, is like, I feel like he always does or says what I didn't know, what I didn't know I wanted to hear, but once it's said, I'm like, yes, like that's,
yeah, yeah.
Or like he'll make a move, like we'll be doing a piece and all of a sudden he'll be playing Dracula and I'm like, I didn't know I wanted to play Universal Monsters and now there's nothing I would rather be playing in the world than Universal Monsters. So I feel like he's the, my subconscious come to life in the absolute best possible way.
Really nice.
Louis, I feel, is just like, he has this fantastic sense of like, anytime I play with him, his characters, I feel, always have some sort of secret, which makes me want to pull that out of him. So I feel like my scene work with him is always like, I need to get to this guy's core. Like, what's his secret? And it's usually something dark. But just the mischief and the fun and the nuance of Louis, of just like, I can do a scene with him and he can just give me a look and I'm like, I know where you're at, man. Like, let's, I know exactly where we're at. Mm-hmm. You're an 8-year-old boy and you just found your dad dead. And I know, like, just from a look or, you know, yeah. Or one word, I'm just like, it's just this sort of, shining I have with Louis, I guess. And then Dolan is just, I've grown to love him so much.
Yeah.
Just like Jordan was saying, just absolute heart, acting chops. And very much recently, I feel like keeping me on my toes, where he'll make a move that's very unexpected or very like, I'm like, can we do that? Or can we say that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it's almost like, I guess we're in this ride together. Where it's, so I feel like just that sensation or that excitement of like, what's Dolan going to do or say? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. He's off the tracks. we're off with him. So yeah, I like Louis said, this is the most safe and the most fun I've had with the team. And I think the fact that we're traveling so much recently, like going to Ohio State 5 or 6 times, and North Carolina's been wonderful, mm-hmm. about bringing us out, and all the other places. I just feel like the travel and the journey with you guys is just, mm-hmm. like the most fun thing in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun to have this be our touring company and have the shows that we do be something that is worth our time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
And each one of us fighting with Ryan at some point during the trip over something.
Yeah.
I think actually me and Adam more than
anybody. I instigate him, but I don't. It's rare that I actually combat him.
Yeah, it didn't happen until New Orleans. That was the big one. That was the real one.
Oh, you guys got a big fight.
Yeah, it was good though.
Has it been resolved?
I thought it was, but then we started talking about it the other day.
It's been swept under the rug.
Yeah. And we start, and then we realized we really neither funny. Of us had changed our positions on it.
Because it was when we were in Ohio State this last couple weekends ago, I guess last weekend. I wasn't able to go to New Orleans, and Adel wasn't able to go to Ohio State, so we had Farrell Walsh with us instead. So it was Farrell and I sitting in the front seat of the car while Louie and Ryan in the course of talking about their argument reignited the argument.
No.
Yeah.
And went through the same thing step by step, and it was really funny, but it was also like I could tell that they both had points that they were sticking to.
Yeah.
And really they both were like, no, I still feel the way that I feel.
Yeah, I know, because like we were in New Orleans and we were we'd had this fight, doesn't matter, details don't matter, and we're sitting down, and the girlfriend of the guy who's hosting, who was hosting us or whatever, letting us sleep in his place, she's like, why don't you guys state each other's point in a fair way? So you say what the other person is saying, and just, you know, and we did, and it felt great. And we're like, oh, I see exactly where you're coming from.
I think after that, I instigated, just because I'm a little devil, I had you guys play each other. I was like,
oh yeah,
Dolan, why don't you be Louie, and Louie, you be Dolan, and see how it feels from the other side.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's when it's.
Oh, it was you that did that?
I did that. I think she said to lay out the situation in a calm manner, and then I was a little
sounds like Adel maybe undermined it by taking it too far.
Yeah, it's great. I don't know, but
I didn't realize how severe the. I thought I was like, oh, we're fine, and then after a while, I was like, oh, something's wrong.
No, no, no. We went to sleep mad. I remember that.
No, it was funny. I mean, it was like I could tell that they that enough time had passed that they were fine with it emotionally, but it was like almost watching two people play a really intense game of chess, you know, where like the competitive spirit of conducting the argument was what had kept them bound to it rather than a true like any kind of actual attachment to the details of what really happened. It was really just the fact that they both wanted to win the chess game.
Yeah, pretty much.
And do we have a winner?
No.
I think Ryan is actually in the right. The way he handled it,
right,
I think, was the thing that I had an issue with. So we're actually arguing kind of about two different things.
Yeah.
Like, I totally agree with what I did was wrong. But I don't agree with the way that he handled it.
Well, I think that's what it was, is that you guys were both calling each other out for things where you had not responded, not behaved in the best way, but were treating that as like oppositional things rather than two successive distinct moments.
Exactly. Where each of you or each of us had
were
been.
Turrets.
Yeah, pretty much. God.
And the true answer is it sounds like you're both turrets.
Yeah, that's about right.
That's all of us, you know.
So you guys got any putting thank you shows coming up?
Gosh, I don't know. I imagine we'll probably book a couple shows at CIC until we figure out what our next sort of run is. I think that was the last email that came mm-hmm. across the boards. We sort of just finished up kind of a busy season between New Orleans and OSU and the IO run, and I think now we're just kind of remarshaling our energies for what happens next. Although I think there may be some ATC dates.
We definitely have an ATC with who's the Weather Underground guy, Bill Ayers. We have a show with Bill Ayers coming up in December.
Cool.
But again, that's sort of our
monologue
group
show.
rather than simply putting thank you. But hopefully we can before then or after then get some straight up PTY shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool. We'll go see PTY. Go see these guys.
Do you guys have any shows coming up?
Yeah, what do you got, Joe?
I have the Bench Co. show at Second City. We have a new show. It's called Occupy Wall Street. We only have, I think, three more shows.
I feel like you're going to get a lot of spillover with that title.
I hope so. Come to protest. Stay to laugh. Nope. We have a sports team at I.O., and then Mike Marinowski and I have our Feldmanowski show at the Upstairs Gallery next Friday at 8 o'clock. I think that's November 4th, and that's it. Micah?
DMNK, we got a show at CIC tonight and some other places coming up. Meridian at I.O.
Are you publishing this today?
No.
Maybe for posterity, you should just say the date.
What was it? It's October 30th.
Yeah, if you release this next week, somebody might go to I.O. tonight looking for your show.
I'm already dead. I got killed yesterday. But
this assassins?
Yeah.
Oh, brother.
That's ongoing. Maybe that'll be over by the time we get this up, hopefully. Schnauzer at the Playground, Out of Character at the Playground, Counterproductive Lover at CIC. Meridian at I.O.
Oh, yeah, the lady screams at the playground.
Don't forget about the lady screams. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on, guys.
Thank you for having us.
You have a beautiful home.
Yeah. Hey. Real nice.
This has been Another Podcast. Check us out at anotherpodcastpodcast.com. Email us. We got an email.
Oh, we got our first email.
Yeah, we got an email from South Bend, Indiana.
Uh-oh. Whoa. What was it?
They said, great show. You should have the Nerdalogs on.
And we will.
And, yeah, we will. We'll do it.
That's Notre Dame territory, right?
Yeah. Email us at anotherpodcastpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to Justin Gorson, our producer.
Can we say hi to Ryan Dolan?
Yeah, let's say hi to Ryan.
Hi, Ryan. I hope work is going okay.
If you made it this far into the podcast.
Yeah.
Sorry about your tires, man.
Stitcher Smart Radio app. Download Stitcher Smart Radio app and stream this and other podcasts on your smartphone without downloading or syncing. What else? Is that everything? Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.